The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
Okay, so let's start here. Let's name the times in life when you need a tent. Can we do that? I think when you're camping, you're a Boy Scout, maybe you need a tent. Maybe if you're getting married outside, you're having a big celebration or a party, or you're setting up a circus. But that's about the only times that you need a tent. The tent that was put up at Berkeley for the latest protest was totally different. This tent is an empathy tent. Oh, man. Doesn't that make you feel all warm inside? An empathy tent. I love that. We should have those everywhere. Now, in the empathy tent, it was designed to give opposing forces a safe space to flesh out their political disagreements in a peaceful empathy tent. Now, the right-wing group Patriot Prayer was speaking on campus, and, you know, when you have a prayer group, you need an empathy tent. You also probably need some armed guards around those people praying. So they were speaking, and the leftist group, unlike the prayer group, the leftist group called By Any Means Necessary, and Antifa showed up. What could possibly go wrong? You've got a bunch of people praying and people who follow the idea of by any means possible. Good thing they had a tent there, because it wasn't long before the representatives from both sides were placed into the tent. Guys, 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 come on, everybody into the tent to talk it out. Well, of course, in today's world, at Berkeley, talking turned to yelling, which turned pushing, which turned to fighting. Almost immediately, the brawling escalated to the point where the empathy tent toppled over. Police officers had to rush to the scene. Four people were arrested, including an activist, for by any means necessary. What? Yvonne has been arrested? She wasn't using any means to get her point across, was she? Yvonne has an interesting profession for an extreme left-wing activist. She is a middle school teacher. Now how confident do you feel in the future of our country, right? She was arrested on suspicion of rioting, obstruction, and battery. This is not Yvonne's first arrest. And this nonsense really didn't come cheap. You don't get an empathy tent just any old place. This protest comes after UC Berkeley preemptively spent $600,000 to ensure protests didn't turn violent when Ben Shapiro spoke on campus. Over $500,000? Think of how many empathy tents that money could buy. We live in a world now where apparently people with different opinions can't talk to each other in a civil fashion at all. We live in a world where it costs $600,000 to stop middle school teachers from becoming violent. And even when you spend all that money, that doesn't work. We live in a world where empathy tents exist. Our inability to be considerate human beings is making our world a much more dangerous place.
So I came down here today to go to math discussion, and I see all this and I have no idea what they're protesting, why they're protesting, or anything like that. And if you look at them, it's ridiculous. You got a guy with purple hair with a lightsaber talking about Hitler. Like it's hard for me to take any of this seriously. The only impact this has on me is that now I have more work to do last minute, because I could not go to math class today.
Oh, wait a minute. You had a guy with a lightsaber and how was he dressed? With the purple hair? He was talking. Berkeley has once again shown us it's not the bastion of education. It's a circus. which in the end makes that tent appropriate after all.
It's Thursday, September 28th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Boop, 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 boop. Let's go to the circus that is the media. There is an awesome clip that will make you feel all warm inside. Let's all run to the empathy tent for Chuck Todd. Listen to what Chuck Todd said about the U.S. Constitution.
Roy Moore, where the phrase Christian conservative doesn't even begin to describe him, could very well be your next U.S. senator.
Can we stop there?
If you don't understand just how...
What exactly does that mean? Where the words Christian conservative doesn't even begin to describe him. What does that mean?
That's interesting. I think maybe he's trying to say...
What?
He's super extra mega Doppler Christian-y.
Yeah.
Like, he's over the top Christian. Maybe a little
Listen
too Christian.
That. Listen to that.
Yeah.
Where Christian conservative doesn't even begin to describe him.
I guess that he's so, like, he's so extreme on that.
Uh-huh.
He's so far down that Christian
rabbit hole.
Road.
Yeah, no, that is, I know.
Like, you could say Christian, like a Christian conservative, you could describe a lot of people that way, right?
Mm-hmm.
That don't necessarily talk all the time about God, right?
Mm-hmm.
They might have Christian values. They might support generally socially conservative platforms or whatever.
Uh-huh.
Roy talks about it all the time, maybe too much.
Yes.
Maybe he's thinking about God too much.
Okay.
That's what he's saying.
Okay. All right. Okay. So go ahead.
Could very well be your next U.S. senator.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't understand just how freaked out some folks in the GOP and the White House are about what that means, then you don't know Roy Moore.
Uh-oh.
First off, he doesn't appear to believe in the Constitution.
Stop!
Wow.
Did you know this?
I didn't know that.
Did you know this when you voted for him? He doesn't even believe in the Constitution.
It's a huge problem.
And it's a huge statement today to make.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure Chuck is going to back that up.
As it's written.
Our rights don't come from government. They don't come from a Bill of Rights. They come from Almighty God.
Now, that's just a taste of what are very fundamentalist views that have gotten him removed from office twice as Alabama's Chief Justice.
Wait a minute.
Hold it just a second. That's just a taste. No, that's a whole meal right there. What he just said, that's not a taste. That's the whole thing. That's breakfast, lunch, dinner, dessert, snacks. That's all of it.
I feel like we need to hear the whole thing again in context, because that's an amazing moment.
Yeah, because I don't understand what he's saying. He doesn't believe in the Constitution. Instead, he believes this crazy idea that your rights don't come from government.
Roy Moore, where the phrase Christian conservative doesn't even begin to describe him, could very well be your next U.S. senator. And you don't understand just how freaked out some folks in the GOP and the White House are about what that means, then you don't know Roy Moore. First off, he doesn't appear to believe in the Constitution as it's written.
Our rights don't come from government. They don't come from a Bill of Rights. They come from Almighty God.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's just a taste of what are very fundamentalist views that have gotten him removed from office twice as Alabama's Chief Justice.
Okay, so Chuck.
Because you like Chuck.
I like Chuck.
You've been on the show many times.
I like Chuck. I think he's a reasonable, nice guy.
And a smart guy.
A smart
Certainly
guy.
An informed guy.
He is... this is not... Here's the problem with this. Let's say... I don't know. Let's say Oliver Stone says something like this. You're like, okay, it's Oliver Stone. And you know he's a Marxist, so whatever. Okay? You hear somebody like... what's her name with the twerking, what's her face?
Miley Cyrus.
Mm-hmm. You hear somebody like Miley Cyrus say something like this, and you're like, it's Miley frickin' Cyrus.
Mm-hmm.
Of course. You hear a college student say something like this, and you're like, okay, that's concerning, but they're not teaching anything in school anymore. They have an empathy tent. But when you hear the guy who hosts Meet the Press say this with such conviction, that's terrifying.
And to escalate it one further step, saying it with that conviction in a pre-written piece. This is not him in a debate off the top of his head going down the wrong road.
So wait, you're not saying that there were writers, producers, all the way along that were reading that script, preparing this material, talking about it in meetings, and no one said, ah, guys, we're 100% wrong on this. It's not even close. I just want to point out, it's not even close. By saying these things, you're going to look like the biggest idiot on the planet because you've engaged in some sort of revisionist history. But beyond that, it shows you completely misunderstand the entire American standard.
And maybe we should not assume everyone is familiar with this standard, but your rights come from God.
Hold on just a second. I need a moment to, could I build an empathy tent in my head for just a second? Let me just for a second, it's nice. It's not one of those cheap white vinyl tents. This is a nice one with the little pointy thing, like, you know, and a little flag on top or something, but not an American flag. God forbid, not an American flag, but just like a little.
It's nice.
Okay. It's air conditioned if you're hot. It's cool if it's hot outside. It's warm if it's cold outside. And there's little throw pillows and maybe rugs. Okay. A place where you can just go and.
Do you feel calm enough now?
I do.
Okay.
So now, Chuck, let's talk about this. Where do your rights come from? Does the U.S. Constitution, the Bill of Rights, is that the source of those rights? Or does it say in the Constitution that there are more rights, but these are just the big ones that we're going to concentrate on that the government must never violate?
It's a document of, let's say, negative liberties. Is that how you'd?
Yes.
Is that how you'd phrase
in
that?
In fact, in communist Russia, they had a charter of positive liberties, which said these are the things that the government must do. Our Constitution is a charter of negative liberties, saying that these liberties are to never be violated. The government can never do these things. So if the government is, if the document, the Bill of Rights, the most game-changing document of all time, if that is the printing press for rights, what made that document a game changer? Because I just want you to think this through. Chuck and everybody, could you give me some more of that empathy tent music just for a second, just in case anybody has slipped in, it's somebody new. Oh. See, it's peaceful, it's warm, it's nice, it's comfortable.
That is nice.
Yeah. Yeah. There's somebody just like you in this tent. Okay. And then there's me. But to concentrate on the person just like you for a second. Okay. We got it. Thank you. Now, what made the Constitution game-changing? Because the world had kings that could just go and just scoop you up, and it could scoop you up and the king could say, you know what, I'm gonna chop off his head. Why? I don't have to tell you why. Wait, why don't you have to tell me why? Could you answer that one? Yeah, I'm the king. Yeah, but I you're what? I'm the king. You're nothing. Now, the reason why King Arthur was so great in that legend of King Arthur is because King Arthur thought, hey, I'm no better than you. Let's just all be together. That was a benevolent king. And you'll notice that King Arthur didn't exist. Okay, that's a legend. Camelot didn't exist. It was an idea. So the pilgrims came over and they said, you know what? We only answer to God. And God gives us certain rights. And the government is instituted among men, by men, to protect those God-given rights.
Who gave them?
God.
Government?
God. No,
oh,
God.
Okay.
I know they will start with G. And O.
Yes. That's really confusing.
And so you can be, you know, because people have a very short attention span, G-O. It could be government. Mm. I don't know. I didn't read the whole word. Okay. So they were, those were given by God. Because if they're not given by God, then they have to be given by man. And when they're given by man, then a man, any man, left, right, upside down, doesn't matter. Any man can say, you know what? No, I have that right. You don't. That's why the rights, you can call it God. You can call it the universe. You can call it just a really happy star, a happy place.
You could even say, for example, we are endowed by our creator with certain unalienable rights. Something, you could phrase it that way, I guess.
I need an empathy tent to be able to hear that kind of language myself. But
is it stressing you out?
It's stressing me out. I don't feel uncomfortable. I feel unsafe.
Oh, my.
Okay, there's no difference between feeling uncomfortable with somebody's idea and feeling unsafe. Let's see. Having a conversation that where somebody's saying something uncomfortable to me and being raped or beaten. No, that's the same. I need a safe zone to hear your unsafe language, Stu. So stop it. You can call God whatever you want. But you have to understand that if you don't have a God, a higher source other than man, giving rights to you, every single soul, then that means somebody can take those rights away. That was the game-changing idea of America. There's no reason that this was revolutionary at its time. There's no reason if the rights just came from government, because they had always done that. Every successful business has great talent, but where do you go to find that great talent to help take your business to the next level? The answer is simple. It's ZipRecruiter. And unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates to find you. They go out and they find them for you. 80% of employers who post a job at ZipRecruiter receive a quality candidate through the site on the end of day one. The results are really, really fast, and ZipRecruiter is trying to make your life a lot easier. Now, you could go and post your job on 100-plus job sites, and you could spend all day doing that, or you can get ZipRecruiter, and you post it once, and it goes out and posts on all the job sites. Then you could go the old way, where you're juggling all the emails and the phone calls to your office. Or you could have them all come into the ZipRecruiter interface and you just screen them, rate them, manage them all in one place. ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses to the Fortune 100 all the way down to companies like mine. Right now, you can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. You just go to ZipRecruiter.com/Beck. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Beck.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
I like to make these kind of announcements so I don't actually feel the full wrath of my wife while I'm standing there. It gives her a couple of hours to cool down. But we've been asked to see if we could use my plane as a cargo plane for Puerto Rico to get supplies there. So we may be taking our vacation, sweetheart, in Puerto Rico. But just want to throw that out real quick. The problem with this is the cargo, getting the cargo there is hard enough. But then all of the cargo is being left at the airport. And the reason why is because they can't find the truck drivers. There's no cell phones. No, nobody has a cell phone. What about the trucks? Where are the trucks? And there's no fuel to put into the trucks. So all of the cargo is starting to stack up at the airport. We have Team Rubicon going in, and we may just be airlifting people over there. But we have Team Rubicon that is on the ground now doing an assessment on exactly what we can do to help. This is kind of like a Marshall Plan kind of thing. The government is really required to help in Puerto Rico on this one. But if you would like to donate, you can go to mercury1.org, mercury1.org for Puerto Rico.
Glenn Beck. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
There's a lot going on with North Korea right now. And we have Michael Malis, who actually went to North Korea. He's the author of Dear Reader, the unauthorized autobiography of Kim Jong-il. Also hosts the podcast You're Welcome, which is up on Anthony Cumia's platform, which is pretty cool. And Michael joins us now.
Michael, there are plant closings now from China in North Korea. There's a new travel ban. And there is also the warm beers on kind of this press junket now talking about what North Korea did to their son from Ohio. Where are we headed?
Well, let's talk about the warm beers, because the news has just changed in the last 12 hours. The last time I was on the show, the point I had made is that North Korea, you know, in defiance of what we think, tends to keep their hostages safe because you want to return the hostage to get the ransom, right? Otto Warmbier's parents went on air all these different shows and said he was severely tortured. His teeth were rearranged by pliers, deaf and blind, just a horrific portrait. However, as soon as, and I'm like, what, did I get it all wrong? If I did get it wrong, you know, and with North Korea, you have to realize, to paraphrase an old line they used about Little and Hellman, everything they say is a lie, including and the, every word they say. So you really have to kind of read between the lines. The coroner came out and said the parents were not saying what they saw. The coroner said on record his teeth were fine. There were no evidence of broken bones or recently healed bones, and there were no evidence of torture. They didn't do an autopsy. They did an external examination. So we have a discrepancy that I frankly don't know how to reconcile.
Why would, I mean, see, here's my thought, Michael. When I saw the warm beers on, I thought, okay, why is this coming out now? He came home a while ago, and I do not want to play into conspiracies, but if you look at history, when people want to build a case for war, these are the kinds of things that happen. The government kind of pushes it out, and you know, you kind of massage the idea that, you know, these are really bad people and we should go to war. I'm not saying that I don't believe the warm beers. I don't know. But that was the first thought that came into my head. But if the coroner is saying that's not true, what is happening?
For the coroner, who's obviously a reputable person, there's a whole team, for them to say on the record, we're surprised the parents are saying this. This is at the very least very odd. However, in a sense, this is secondary. This young man was murdered. This young man was imprisoned. This young man, according to North Korea, was sentenced to 15 years hard labor for stealing a poster. He was a hostage. So when you have a nation that takes tourists, invited tourists who have a visa, if you have them grabbing people and holding them hostage, this is not a regime that recognizes international law and decency.
And it's also a regime that does do this and much worse to their own people.
Oh, and North Korea has admitted that for decades they've been kidnapping Japanese citizens from Japan and people from South Korea and keeping them hostage for decades. We think it's to teach people Japanese, to train them to be spies. So this has been going on for a very long time. In fact, in 2001, when the Japanese prime minister visited Pyongyang and they were having talks, bilateral talks, in hopes of normalizing relationships, at the time, the dear leader, Kim Jong-il, admitted this and apologized, thinking that Japan would be like, oh, forget about it, it's not a big deal. And the Japanese were gobsmacked. They couldn't believe that Kim Jong-il was admitting to this in such a cavalier manner and thinking just an apology would kind of, you know, make it all go away.
Michael Malis is with us. He's the author of Dear Reader. He actually went over and spent time in North Korea and warns that they are a you know, it's not what you think it is. Can you take me to Donald Trump's speech in the UN back during the World War II when we were dealing with a crazy dictator named Hitler? FDR did not call him names or anything else, but the Marx brothers and probably most famously Charlie Chaplin in something called The Great Dictator did mock him. And the way to get under the skin of a dictator is to mock them. They do not like that. Donald Trump was told, apparently, by his advisors, do not mock him at the UN. Don't call him names. Donald Trump did. Do you think that was effective for the president in this situation or not?
I can't think of anything smarter to do. Because their whole pretense in North Korea, and they refer to us always as a slur, the U.S. imperialists, their pretense is that we're quaking in our boots because of Kim Jong-un, just like we had been scared of his father and of his grandfather. And I had met a refugee, and there was that movie that came out with James Franco and Seth Rogen, The Interview, a few years back. And she had said, it would be great if North Koreans saw this movie, not because it's clever or funny, it wasn't, because they would see we are treating him as a laughingstock. Now, this is someone who his grandfather allegedly could walk on water, literally. You know, they're taught these kind of miracles that go around these leaders. So you have to imagine how those translators have to, when you're using syntax, you know, in North Korean, there's a form of language that only the leaders use. It's an honorific. You can't say his name by himself. You have to say Marshal Kim Jong-un or Dear Leader Kim Jong-il. So for them to try to translate something so colloquial as Rocket Man, it would be like, you know, if you were a god and I'm calling you Glennie, you can't even wrap your head around it. Like, it's just a level of familiarity and disrespect.
Would the people in North Korea hear that?
Well, they wouldn't know what to do, because on the one hand, you want to say that, look, President Trump's a lunatic. He's, you know, he's rattling his saber. He's being aggressive. On the other hand, it would be very hard for them to even repeat that he's using such vulgar language, vulgar in a broad sense, to refer to the leader. So on the one hand, oh my gosh, he's disrespected. But let me use an extreme example. If another country used a four-letter word in reference to President Trump, the media wouldn't know how to report it. Would they censor the word? Do you say it? If you're saying it, it's just horrific. So this is the quandary he forced North Korea to put themselves in. Hmm. And this is him showing them, I'm not scared of you, and I don't think you're someone worthy of respect.
Talking to Michael Malice. Michael, there's a couple of interesting developments, one of the things we've been trying to do with North Korea is to get them to somehow have some pressure put on them from China. China is now announcing that they're closing all North Korean-owned companies in their country. Malaysia has a new travel ban with North Korea. Are these things actually coming to fruition finally?
Yes, these are all wonderful, if small, developments, and we can see the consequences in this way. I think it was last week or earlier this week, the North Korean foreign minister had said, this was reported as an escalation when it was a de-escalation. He had said that President Trump has effectively declared war, and that if there's any bombers in North Korea, they're going to shoot them down, right? Mm-hmm. Let's look what happened. Back in July, they're saying, we are going to bomb Guam. We've got four missiles ready. In August, we're going to attack Guam. Now, they're putting words in President Trump's mouth. They are saying, you are declaring war. We're the victims. We're the good guys. You're the bad guys. There's a difference between, Stu, I'm going to go to your house and burn it down, and if you come to my house, I'm going to shoot you. The second neighbor might be a crank. I just won't go to his house. The first one's the problem. And this has been how their rhetoric has changed. It has been from, we're going to attack you, to, if you come here, we will defend ourselves, which is definitely a retreat, even though the press treats it as an escalation.
So then what does that mean, Michael? That's really good news. What does that mean for the future? What's coming our way?
One of the best things about how President Trump is dealing with North Korea, and this has also come out in the reports, most Americans don't know what to make of President Trump, right? And if you can, if you're from another country, try to explain going from President Obama to President Trump. These two men, even forget their politics, just in terms of personalities and style, are as different as can be. And President Trump has no political background whatsoever to kind of read between the lines, right? So North Korea doesn't know what to make of him, which in terms of negotiation is an extremely effective technique to have in your back pocket, because you don't know what this guy is capable of. So you had better put all your money on diplomacy and negotiation, because if he turns out to be someone capable of pulling the trigger, North Korea has explicitly and repeatedly said they know it would be a disaster for them.
So if you were looking at the doomsday clock and it's 3 minutes to midnight, the last time we talked, where do you put the hands?
I would put it to four. In my opinion, because again, if you had all the UN voting against North Korea, if North Korea is appealing to the international community, if they're changing their tune and are trying to be dignified and legalistic, this is someone who is saying, okay, we took a wrong turn somewhere.
Michael, great news. Thank you so much.
You really need to read Michael Malice's book about North Korea, because it's not only really informative and all true, but really funny. It's written as a first person biography of Kim Jong-il, but all the facts in it are true. You know, where he says that he remembers the day he was born like it was yesterday, and he remembers every detail of the day of his birth. He actually told the country that. It's available everywhere.
Liberty Save continues to amaze me, amaze their customers. They make great safes, but they also are now making it really easy to own one. Now at LibertySafe.com, you can buy a Liberty Safe at a great price and receive 2 months interest-free payments with zero down and zero APR. They even offer the Liberty Safes for as low as $20 a month. $20 a month, and you have the best built safe on the planet. Been working with Liberty for, I think, 7 years now, and I have seen them grow as a company. They were a small little manufacturer that was making just these really high-quality safes, to now one of the, if not the biggest, builder of safes in America. They're all built here, and there is nothing like owning a Liberty Safe. It's peace of mind, lifetime warranty, in-home delivery service that is unmatched in the industry. So buy a Liberty Safe. We did. We're glad we did. You're going to end up putting more things in your Liberty Safe than you ever thought possible. Trust me on this. The number one complaint, this is actually true. The number one complaint with Liberty Safe is, I should have bought the bigger one. Do what I did. Have it installed right in your home. Now with 12 months interest-free payments or as low as $20 a month on approved credit. Every home has valuables that need protecting, and every home needs a Liberty Safe. Go to LibertySafe.com, the home of the best-built safes on the planet. Go there now, LibertySafe.com.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
I want to thank you so much for listening to us. I want to thank you so much for supporting us, not only today, but over the years. We are in the midst of really doing some dynamic thinking on the future of the media in its entirety. I don't think people really understand. I took a bunch of people out into the hallway yesterday where we have a big chalkboard, and I said, I just want you guys to I want you to help me think things through here. I've been saying for a long time that the world is being changed, and all the way down maps. I said, we're going to wake up and the maps are going to be changed and the infrastructure is being changed. And you can either be a part of that changing infrastructure and design it yourself, or you're going to find yourself working for somebody else and you're just going to be in it. And I was talking to some members of the staff yesterday about what's coming in the media. And I said, I want to take you to the old West for a second. if we look at the Wild West, somebody had just said this to me the other day. It was maybe that Google ethicist who said, you know, it's the Wild West is of the internet is coming to an end. And I think they're right. The Wild West, what it was, is you could go out and you could start a town, and these towns would pop up everywhere, and just where people were congregating. So it might be because it was natural beauty or there were resources or whatever. But once the train started to be built, the states and the territories started to lobby, get the train to come to our town. And if the train didn't come to your town, that town ended up usually a ghost town. If your town was big enough and it was a city, the train would automatically come there. If not, you had to coax the train to come to be able to give you a place. Or if you were a place that had a lot of water or the coal or whatever they needed to keep the train going, the train would come to you. The Wild West was over once the train system was put into place, because then it wasn't just anywhere. The train kind of dictated the growth. The tracks have been laid, and the tracks now have been laid over the last 6 or 7 years. They've been laid by Amazon, Google, Apple, Netflix, Hulu. They've laid the tracks. And even Hulu is kind of an outpost. It's kind of an F troop, kind of out way out in the middle of nowhere. The train tracks have been laid. And I'm sharing this with you because I don't think that conservative media is thinking this through. And it's changed right now. In the last 3 months, there has been dynamic shifts, and the tracks are clearly being laid and are already laid. And you can be your little outpost all you want, but I'm telling you, the tracks are already there. How do we get people on that train or near that train?
Glenn Beck. Love, courage, truth. Glenn Beck.
Yesterday, and on NBC, on Meet the Press Daily, Chuck Todd said this about Judge Roy Moore.
Roy Moore, where the phrase Christian conservative doesn't even begin to describe him, could very well be your next U.S. senator. If you don't understand just how freaked out some folks in the GOP and the White House are about what that means, then you don't know Roy Moore. First off, he doesn't appear to believe in the Constitution as it's written.
Our rights don't come from government. They don't come from a Bill of Rights. They come from Almighty God.
Now, that's just a taste of what are very fundamentalist views that have gotten him removed from office twice as Alabama's Chief Justice.
So I want you to understand, first of all, this is from Meet the Press. This is Chuck Todd. This is not just something that he's just saying. This has been something that has been written, put in a teleprompter. Producers have read, writers have read, researchers have read, and nobody thought to stop Chuck Todd from making a huge error. Chuck, you're smarter than this. I don't know how you've been misled, but you are completely wrong. If our rights come from the government, our founders knew, then our rights could be taken away. The entire Bill of Rights structure, the amendments to the Constitution, are to say there are many rights out there that come from God. There are many rights that people have. And these are the rights that the government can never, ever violate. That's the premise behind the Bill of Rights. It's not saying that the government issues these rights. It's saying these rights belong to the people and the government can never, ever, ever violate them. Now, I don't know how this has become a religious fundamental kind of issue, as you call somebody who holds those views, a religious fundamentalist who should be feared. Let me share with you the audio of another, quote, I guess you would call, religious fundamentalist who explained these rites.
For I have sworn before you and Almighty God, the same solemn oath our forebears prescribed nearly a century and three quarters ago. And yet the same revolutionary beliefs for which our forebears fought are still at issue around the globe. The belief that the rights of man come not from the generosity of the state, but from the hand of God.
It's Thursday, September 28th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
That was, by the way, John F. Kennedy, for anybody who didn't know. I just thought I'd throw that out. Helping people in times of crisis should not be a partisan issue. If there was ever a moment when Democrats and Republicans can truly collaborate, you would think it would be working together for something like the disaster in Puerto Rico, but that doesn't seem to be happening right now. These are American citizens. I know that's shocking to people. Wait a minute, you're from Puerto Rico. Yes, those are American citizens in Puerto Rico. They just don't have a star on the flag, but they have everything else. Last Sunday, Hillary Clinton tweeted unsolicited advice to President Trump that he should send the USS Comfort. Now, this is a Navy ship, a hospital ship. She said, send it to Puerto Rico now. These are American citizens. She tweeted this helpfully. Let's take her at as a nice gesture. Turns out the Navy was already preparing to send the Comfort. And there are three other U.S. Navy ships already in Puerto Rico working on relief. And 5,000 active duty U.S. service members are on the ground right now. 13 Coast Guard ships are working to fix ports and launching search and rescue missions. Hillary didn't have all of the facts when she pleaded for Trump to, quote, send the Comfort. The Pentagon discussed sending the Comfort to Puerto Rico as early as last weekend, but decided against it because the damaged Puerto Rican ports were unable to accommodate the ship because it's so large and because Puerto Rican government requested help in getting the island's 60 hospitals operational instead of sending us a ship. So what did the Pentagon do? Instead of sending the ship, which would have been a nice photo op, the Pentagon sent a fleet of Air Force jets with supplies, generators, and medical personnel to be able to do what the governor of Puerto Rico asked, and that is, please help us with our hospitals. Hillary's tweet didn't mention any of these things. The president's critics aren't interested in hearing about his actual relief efforts because his approval rating rose after Hurricanes Harvey and Irma, and they can't have that. No, we must destroy him. Priority number one for the left isn't helping Puerto Rico. And quite honestly, priority number one for the right, if this were Barack Obama, the same kind of grotesque political engine would have been churning out this kind of garbage about Barack Obama. What they're trying to do is make America think that Donald Trump doesn't care about helping Puerto Rico. It sounds like they've already got their main talking point all picked out.
This is going to turn to be Mr. Trump's Katrina.
President Trump brings a ton of criticism on himself all the time, but this is not one of these times. He seems to be trying to help Puerto Rico and Democrats. If they truly cared about Puerto Rico, we should probably put our partisan jerseys aside for a little while and see how we can help.
You can help too. MercuryOne.org/hurricane relief. Mercury One is doing all sorts of stuff to help in Puerto Rico as that just, I mean, that is just getting started. It is a long-term disaster there. And, you know, look, we can help with money and supplies, but that's only part of the solution. Another part of the solution is getting the government out of the way from screwing Puerto Rico like they've been doing for a very long time with something called the Jones Act.
Most people don't know what the Jones Act even is, but it is this crazy law that forces ships to come to the United States before going to Puerto Rico. So if any ship wants to come and deliver supplies from anywhere in the world, it first has to pull into Miami or someplace else and then to Puerto Rico.
It's absolutely no sense.
It makes no sense at all.
It's a protectionist measure that's been in there for a long time to protect the U.S. shipping industry. And it's really hurt Puerto Rico before the disaster and needs to be repealed. Nobody knows more about this than Scott Linsicum. He's from the Cato Institute, an international trade attorney. And really, when it comes to trade, Scott's the man.
Scott, can you tell us what is the Jones Amendment? Why did it first come into play?
Yeah, so the Jones Act is officially called the Merchant Marine Act of 1920. It was originally implemented around the time of World War One, and the idea was to bolster American national security by ensuring a strong shipbuilding industry and a very strong merchant marine. Now, again, that was in 1920, and essentially what the law does is it requires any shipping between U.S. ports, so say from Port of Jacksonville to Puerto Rico, or from the Port of Houston up to the Northeast, that must be done on vessels that are American-built, American-owned, American-flagged,
that is crazy.
And American-crewed.
That is crazy.
Right. So now it's about 100 years old now. And the national security implications have changed quite a bit, I would think, since that time. But we also have, now we have 100 years of evidence about what the Jones Act actually does. And what we see is that it dramatically inflates the cost of shipping goods, particularly essentials like food and energy, between U.S. ports. And these costs are, of course, ultimately passed on to U.S. consumers. It also, quite ironically, disadvantages American farmers and manufacturers versus foreign imports, which don't have to come from, of course, foreign countries on Jones Act vessels, which, of course, are more expensive than foreign vessels. And then it actually harms the U.S. shipping industry. So we see that the very industry that the Jones Act is designed to protect, is designed to bolster, has actually been severely degraded over the last several decades. And in fact, has been found to be, Jones Act vessels have been found to be less safe than vessels that are flagged, that are foreign.
Unbelievable.
Flagged.
Okay, so let's start here. Yesterday, when we were talking about this on the air, the government was still deciding what they were going to do, if they were going to repeal this or suspend this for the time. And we were talking about this morning. They did suspend that, right? They did say
This morning, we found out that the president has issued a 10-day waiver, which is permitted under the Jones Act. So essentially, Puerto Rico for the next 10 days can shipments to Puerto Rico can be on any type of vessel, regardless of the ownership or the flag or whatever.
Well, that's good, because I feel like this is a 10-day problem. The whole Puerto Rico, all the power being gone, about 10 days should do it.
I think 10 days will wrap it all up. They won't even have the ports.
Exactly.
They won't even have the ports open in 10 days.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, what we found, studies have actually looked at the economic harms that the Jones Act causes specifically to Puerto Rico. One study found it costs Puerto Rico over $500 million per year. It could get to up to $1 billion a year, depending on the year. The New York Fed found pretty significant harms in terms of inflated shipping costs. Others have found the same. Now, I will defend the Trump administration in one sense. And that is that we're really in need of a legislative cure, not an executive cure.
Because
the law ties the executive's hands, requiring them to couch any sort of waiver in terms of national defense. Now, you can make, of course, a national defense argument here. There's a military base in Puerto Rico. Of course, it is, you know, an American territory. These are American citizens and so forth. But the fact is that the executive branch can't actually consider any of these cost arguments. So the fact is they can't say, at least publicly, look, this is just imposing ridiculous, unnecessary costs on suffering Puerto Ricans. They can't say that. Instead, they have to make this kind of, you know, circular or circuitous national defense argument.
Just because of the way the law is written.
Exactly. Because the law was actually tightened up, believe it or not, in 2009 by our wonderful Congress to essentially DHS has to not only couch its decision in terms of national defense, but it actually has to get a ruling with respect to sufficient port capacity and sufficient fleet, U.S. fleet capacity. So they, again, cannot consider...
What the hell is it? Wait, hang on just a second. Scott, why did the DHS under Obama want this? What possible... What were they looking for? Were they afraid that some ship would come in with a nuke or something? I'm being serious. What were they afraid of?
Well, they were afraid of the revolt by the U.S. shipping industry and the unions, I think. I mean, the fact is, you know, President Trump, to his credit, yesterday admitted that the pressure against waiver was coming from the U.S. shipping industry, which is highly mobilized and very effective. I mean, they've been able to keep this protectionism in place for 100 years. They're doing a pretty good job at playing defense.
Yeah.
And the reality is that this is classic protectionist politics. You have concentrated benefits delivered indirectly to the American shipping industry and those unions, and you have these diffuse costs that American consumers typically don't pay attention to, even consumers in Hawaii or Puerto Rico or Alaska who face disproportionate harms.
So
the only time we see this type of protectionism actually go away or be reformed is when you have an intense spotlight on the issue, and of course a very sympathetic victim. And in this case, that's exactly what we have. The spotlight was turned on, and the cockroaches scurried away.
And again, this is, as you said, it's been around since 1920. This is not a Trump thing. I think Trump has done what he can do here, but what is more important here is a full repeal of it forever. It's not just a 10-day waiver.
Yeah.
It needs to go away forever. Tell me if you have if these numbers are the same that you have seen.
We have less than a minute.
Scott, real quick. $17 billion in the last 20 years that is its cost for Puerto Rico. A car, think of this. This is not Greenwich, Connecticut. Puerto Rico does not have these high incomes.
Yes.
A car costs $6,000 more in the mainland. It costs twice as much to ship to Puerto Rico, a U.S. territory, than it does to Jamaica, another country. It makes absolutely no sense.
That's exactly right. And then, you know, even consumers on the mainland suffer. One study showed that we pay an extra 10 to 15 cents per gallon of gas.
Wow.
Because the Jones Act forces crude oil producers in Texas to actually ship fuel to or oil to Canada to be refined instead of northeastern refiners because it's so much cheaper.
Unbelievable.
To do so, 'cause they can avoid Jones Act.
Unbelievable. Thank you so much, Scott. I appreciate it. If you want to learn more about this, please do. Scott is really the guy to go to with the Cato Institute, but we have to alert our congressmen and our senators. This has got to stop.
Scott Linscombe is from the Cato Institute, as well as an international trade attorney. You can follow him on Twitter at Scott Linscombe.
We all hear the stories in the news. Good guy uses a gun to protect his family from the criminals, and he's the one arrested. And actually, you know, I hate to say that, you know, hey, we hear about these stories in the news. We don't. You don't. You don't. The reason why is because the press does not want to show the good guy with a gun winning. So you rarely hear about stories where the good guy has actually taken down the burglar. You'd rarely hear them. You do hear them when it's in a place in the country where that person is arrested and they are in big trouble. Take the recent story, USCCA member and Army veteran Buddy Shepard, military background. thought he was ready for anything. Three armed guys come into his house and put his family's safety in jeopardy. They got a rude awakening because he confronted the three. He had a pistol. When the cops arrived, he was outnumbered 3-1. Guess which one was arrested? He was. He was charged with 3 counts of aggravated assault with a deadly firearm and tossed into jail. The minimum sentence would be 3 years in state prison. Luckily, Buddy had a USCCA card on him. He's a member. The moment they got his call, they jumped into action and they completely shielded him, his family, from legal and financial ruin. This is why you need the USCCA. This is why I urge you to go visit protectanddefend.com. You need somebody watching over you. That's what they do. Get the 2017 Concealed and Carry Family Defense Guide from the Concealed Carry Association, 100% free, 164 pages, teaches you everything you need to know. It's 100% free, even comes with an audio version, so you can listen to it on the car. But you need someone to protect you. You're the first responder. Who's watching over you? The USCCA. Go there now. Make sure that you can repeat the story that Buddy had, where he didn't have anything to worry. You go to protectanddefend.com and you join the USCCA now. Protectanddefend.com.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
Ed in Texas on the Jones Act. Hello, Ed. Welcome to the Glenn Beck program.
Good morning, Glenn. Good to speak with you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you for all you've done so far, for all of the hurricanes. Victims and all that.
Thank you.
I wanted to call in because your discussions on the Jones Act needs to be looked into a lot closer, a little bit more homework, in that the Jones Act is the act that actually granted the citizenship, the U.S. citizenship, to those born on the island past to date. I think it's, I can't remember the date, Glenn, but it's the actual act that does give us the citizenship. So a full repeal of that act is
right. But I think
it's actually the merchant. Yeah. And it's not that. You're right. That's a misstatement. It's not the full repeal of that. It is the merchant marine part of that affects shipping. Is what
you're
talking about.
You're right, but yeah, Ed. You're technically right, and we're sorry we misstated that. And thanks for clearing that up. But it is the merchant marine part of the Jones Act, and I think we can all agree. When I was down in, Puerto Rico a year ago, I think 2 years ago, and the poverty is just outrageous. And part of it is because they can't dig themselves out of, they get a lot of good things from America, but they also get a lot of bad things. For instance, unions, they can't create enough jobs because of all of the restrictions we put on them. They're already an island. We have to start removing a lot of these restrictions to help the people of Puerto Rico.
Glenn Beck. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So Donald Trump and the Republicans are looking for a win because I don't think people are sick of winning yet. And we have now, tomorrow is the last day for the Obamacare repeal. It's not going to happen. Donald Trump yesterday came out and said, don't worry, we have the votes to do it next year. I doubt that is true. Why wait a year? So that's off the table now. We are now looking at a tax plan. And can we get this done? I was a little underwhelmed by what the tax plan was, but at least it's a step in the right direction. If we could even get this passed, we are negotiating. It's weird because he's good at negotiating with Kim Jong-un. He just calls him and says, I don't care who you are, little short rocket man. And it is enough to get people to quake in their boots and get things done. With his strategy with the Democrats has been radically different. And he's starting at a place that I wouldn't be happy with if we ended there. But at least it would be a step in the right direction. Here are the details of the plan.
So there is a lot of good in there, and it's important to note. This is not one of those situations where you're like, I don't know, is this even better than Obamacare?
No, this is
a absolute improvement to our tax system.
So wait. Let me rephrase this so I make myself clear. What I don't like about this is if it ends here, if let's just say they magically get up and Chucky Schumer says, I love this. We could have done, but we could do better than this. We can do better than this. Mm-hmm. However, should we pursue this with all of our might? Yes, but I'm concerned that the margins are so small in some areas that by the time you negotiate, it's marginal. It's not nominal, but it's marginal.
Yeah, if it started somewhere else and ended here, I wouldn't be thrilled, but I would be, okay, we got something there.
Yes.
It's the fact that we're starting here does make me nervous.
Yes.
And so there are some good things in the plan. There are some bad and scary things. The good things, the corporate tax drops significantly. We have the highest corporate tax rate in the world. It drops in this plan to 20%.
Should be lower than that. Should be 10 to 15. You want to change the world? You want to really dominate and have jobs come here? Change the corporate rate to 10%.
Yeah. And so, and Trump won it, I think, 15. So he was trying to get it to 15 in the campaign. They're starting here with 20.
Why?
Now, 20 is what you would call a competitive rate.
Yes.
With the rest of the world. The average, I think, is 22.5 in the industrialized world. So it's slightly less than that. But that's a good improvement. I mean, a big one. And you shouldn't just dismiss it. It's also good for small businesses who will...
If it ends at 20.
If it ends at 20. I'm taking this plan as if this is what you got.
Right.
Right. So
you want to compete with the world. We have other costs. We have unions. We have regulation. So we have other costs. You want to compete. You have to come in lower than the rest of the world because their workers are going to have health care, everything else. It's just... You want to be dramatically lower.
Yeah, and I agree with that. To push back a little bit on that point, though, I think people want to do business in the United States. If you have a choice and everything is equal cost, people will go to the United States because we have a lot of sort of institutional advantages when it comes to business. We still do things better than the rest of the world.
We do.
The issue is we've been so uncompetitive for such a long time with these tax rates. This at least moves us into a competitive position, and it's a real positive.
I would say that you are also now moving into a world that is beginning to be convinced at the highest levels that America's best days are behind her. Whether it's true or not doesn't matter. Perception is reality. That America's days are our best days are behind her, and that the United States could go unstable. If you add instability, if you add protest and riots on our streets and instability at all, where an army needs to be called up to quash things, people do not want to work in the United States. They'll be looking for someplace else.
Yeah, and that's always a risk, right?
Yes.
On the individual rates. So one of the big things that I've already heard, we talked about this yesterday briefly, but I've already heard left-wing commentators this point, which is... The way it works is it simplifies seven different brackets into three. The lowest bracket in the old plan was 10%. The lowest bracket in the new plan is 12%. So obviously, to anyone who's just looking at this at a surface
gosh, they're raising taxes on the poor.
And they've raised taxes on the poor and they've cut taxes for the rich. It's the talking point already. So when you actually look at this, it's not true at all. It is not going to affect basically anyone in that way. It is going to, because what they're doing is they're raising the standard deduction. They're doubling it in this plan. Again, you're getting into the weeds when you start talking about this, but basically if you take the standard deduction, you're not going to be paying taxes on the entire first bracket. So your first bracket rate will really be zero. But the way that it's worded is going to easily allow people to claim they're raising taxes on the poor. It's not all clear here. It's not all wins for as far as lower rates. Listen to this. The 10% rate goes to 12, and the 15% rate that currently is out there also goes to 12%. So a slight cut for the second bracket and a slight raise for the bottom one. But the standard deduction is going to knock a lot of that out for most people anyway. When it gets a little higher, it's interesting. The 25% bracket that currently exists stays the same. It goes to 25. The 28% bracket, you're talking about people making about $100,000 a year now. Those people go from 28 to 25. So a slight decrease. Now, the people who, now we're up to, let's say, $200,000. Those people, their rate actually goes up. That bracket goes from 33 to 35. The current 35% bracket stays the same, does not go down. 35 to 35. Those are people making about $400,000.
And then the very top bracket, it goes from 39.6 to 35. This is getting all the publicity because this is their way to say that rich people are getting the tax break. Now, it's interesting because your whole way up there, really, to get that tax break, you're going to have to make a lot of money. And even then, you're not really going to get it because they're going to take away a lot of these deductions. However, there is a Planet X in this plan.
Does it have a fiery tail?
It does have a fiery tail. You remember Planet X? It was going to destroy the country on September 23rd and the world.
No, that's not what he said, but yes.
No, it was going to destroy the world.
Right.
Because a big planet was going to come by right, and we hadn't seen it yet.
Got it.
And it's this unnamed planet. Mm-hmm. Well, we might think we know the planets, but no. Mm-hmm. There's a Planet X, right?
Okay. What's the Planet X here?
You might think you know the brackets because there's three brackets.
Mm-hmm.
However, written into this plan.
Uh-oh.
In the plan.
Oh, boy.
Is a fourth bracket. Now, the fourth bracket.
Wait, do I want to open the fourth bracket?
It's bracket X. It's
like, I'm having an okay day. Right. I'm not having a great day, but I'm having an okay day.
Oh, yes. You're going to love this one because bracket X is a bracket that can be instituted in negotiations above the top rate.
Mm-hmm.
So right now, the top rate is 35%.
Mm-hmm.
But with bracket X, the top rate could be anything higher than 35%. So what they may, what they're, this is actually very similar to what Steve Bannon was floating out there before he left, which is take a number for wealthy people and make that the kind of billboard number, make that higher. So raising it from 39.6 into the 40s and maybe the 50s, jack that thing through the ceiling so you can say, oh, well, you know what, we're punishing the rich people.
Making $1 million, we're going to make it 60%.
Yeah. And so they're going to jack those people up to some ridiculous rate. And that is, so that is in the plan as a possibility. It's not concrete in the plan, but it's there.
You know who did this?
Who?
Come on. Come on.
Satan?
Close. Wilson. This
Woodrow
is exactly
Wilson.
What Wilson and FDR did.
Woodrow Wilson's in hell right now, too.
He is. That's why I say he's close. He close. May have actually been Satan.
He is president of hell currently.
Putting aside all the craziness engulfing our world right now, we all need to strive to become more self-reliant because you just don't know when the world is going to take a turn for the worse. The best time to prepare is before an emergency, when time is on your side. I want you to act today and secure your family's future by being prepared. I trust my Patriot Supply with my food storage, and I would highly recommend that you do the same. These are the people that, you know, my grandmother used to can stuff. My grandmother, my aunt, and my mom, and then eventually my sisters. I wish I would have, I wish I would have learned how to do it myself. I have no idea. We'd all be dead in a week if I had to can something. That's the way we used to have food storage. And we did it because, you know, everybody in my family was working stiff. And you never knew if, you know, somebody's going to lose their job or times were just going to get tough. And times around my house were tough a lot. And so we would go down into our food pantry and we would grab something from, you know, the fruit cellar and bring it up. My Patriot Supply is the modern way of doing this. Now they have a 102 serving survival food kit. It is healthy. It lasts up to 25 years and it's less than a dollar per serving. You get breakfast, lunch and dinner shipped to your home for free. Call 1-800-200-7163 or order online at preparewithglenn.com. A prepared America is a strong America. And that is my Patriot Supply's mission. So call 800-200-7163 or preparewithglenn.com.
Glenn Beck.
You know, everybody has an opinion. And I don't think anybody's opinion is more valuable than anybody else's. I've been doing this for 40 years, and it still is remarkable to me that people care about my opinion, because I barely do. And as I get older, the more I realize, it's just another guy's opinion. And now that everybody has Facebook and Twitter, and you're a publisher, You realize the power that each of us have now? Just 10 years ago, if you wanted your voice to be heard, you really had to do something. I mean, you really had to, you had to go through and network and get jobs and get on the air and then make that a success. And you wanted to publish a book, you have to go to Simon & Schuster or something like that. You'd have to go to these crazy, I mean, it's crazy. You should go to these meetings with me. Crazy meetings in these gigantic New York boardrooms. You don't have to do any of that now. And so while we have made all of that meaningless, all those hoops that you had to jump through, we have found so many people with different opinions now that nobody, they wouldn't have been able to have a voice. And it's really good. But everybody has an opinion, and so it devalues, or no, it puts into perspective how much somebody's opinion is worth, no more than somebody else. What is worthwhile is perspective, because that's hard to find. That takes a lifetime, and sometimes it takes just standing in another place. Everybody can view an event one way, but there might be Zapruder. There might be somebody who's standing in another location with another angle, and they capture something that nobody else saw. That's perspective. I think that's what we should all be seeking. Not more opinions. I read an article from somebody who's really important to the conservative movement. Here's the title. As I lay literally dying, politics doesn't matter. I write this with multiple blood clots currently in my lungs. By the end of the day, I'm tired and out of breath. My chest is tight. Thankfully, this go-around is not fatal, but a year ago, I was rushed to an ICU with my blood oxygen level steadily declining below 90%, and my lungs were slowly suffocating me. And as nurses were sticking needles in my arms and pumping me full of fluids, doctors were calling my wife to tell her that they thought I had lung cancer. I have to tell you that American politics really doesn't matter when you have kids and you're dying. You begin to seriously ask yourself, what do you want your kids to know if you're gone? If I would have died, my kids would have learned everything about me from Google. They would only know what people who hate me think about me. I was far more worried about my kids' relationship with God and their mother than about politics or the political fight of the day. American politics today is such a small ball gutter politics. It's the stakes are so small that the fights are all that matters. I don't want my kids to have any part of that. Yes, there are fights that do matter, but there are many more fights you think matter than actually do. Having very nearly died, my priorities have taken more than a small shift in the last year. I'd rather be preaching than blogging. My faith is way more important to me. My kids' faith is way more important to me than my own faith. They're the priority. That's perspective. I would pray for you and for me that we can find that perspective that Eric Erickson found without getting the diagnosis that he had received.
Glenn Beck.
So you're doing some business travel. We've all done it. And you've all dealt with the ridiculous nonsense that's associated with it. You know, there's the picture I saw on Twitter where someone had put their bare feet in between the seats on the armrest of the people in front of them. Can you imagine that? That is, I'd go crazy. All that stuff happens on business travel. So you might as well have, first of all, the best prices. And Upside.com has those. Second of all, you better get some free stuff out of this because business travel can be annoying. So they're going to give you up to like at least $100 gift card from Amazon.com just for booking with Upside.com. And they'll give you other opportunities to save money as well. Plus, they have the 6-star treatment you deserve. Upside navigators are always accessible. Start your Upside 6-star treatment right now. $100 gift card to Amazon.com. Use the code back at Upside.com. Upside.com. Minimum purchase required. See site for complete details.
Love, courage, truth. Glenn Beck.
There's two things happening in the world right now. One is create chaos. We've been watching this for 15 years. I've been warning you that our enemies are going to do everything they can to create chaos. Chaos is, for if you believe in the Mahdi, the only way the Mahdi returns, you wash the world in blood and create chaos. That's number one. Russia's doing it, some in the Middle East are doing it, and quite honestly, some people here in the United States are doing it. The second thing that is happening is divide and conquer. You've got to divide America. House divided against itself cannot stand, and it's happening right now under our nose, and many of us are participating in it without even realizing it. Chaos is the name of the game, and we're falling for it over and over and over again. Now listen to this story. Facebook revealed this month that Russia purchased $100,000 worth of political ads during the 2016 campaign. Now, this is the way it's been reported. And you'd think all of these were pro-Trump, but they weren't. Yesterday, the details emerged. And it's a funny thing when you start looking at the details, how it completely changes a story. What was it that Russia was actually doing? Who were they actually supporting? The answer is everyone and no one. Anything that would stir up chaos and anything that would divide, they were for. In 2015, Russian Facebook ads had supported and condemned Black Lives Matter. Now listen to this. Some of the ads were pro-Muslim and pro-immigration. The very next day, those same groups would post negative Muslim ads and anti-immigration rhetoric. They didn't care. Trump, Russia, Hillary, the right, the left, they're playing all sides. What we're doing now is we're separating ourselves. We're saying, you're just trying to make this about Hillary Clinton. You're just trying to make this about Donald Trump. No. No, it's about chaos and divide and conquer. You think the Russians actually cared who became the president of the United States? I mean, in terms of heads of state, the president of the United States is one of the weakest authority figures in the world. The founding fathers made sure that was possible, and it was on purpose. The Russians know this. They're not afraid of the president. They're afraid of the American people. The American people, do you know that out of all of the Russian plans of invasion of the United States during the Cold War, there was only one place that was not a part of a plan. All of the plans, we can come over the polar cap, we can bomb them first, we can come, you know, through the oceans. How are we going to do it? There's only one place that they said, we're not going there, and that is Texas. Why? Because they knew Texans were united, Texans also were armed, and they knew Texans would fight to the last man because they were united. So the Russians are doing nothing other than dividing us, regardless of who becomes president. Now, this goes a lot deeper than just the election. As early as last week, Russian intelligence were using the NFL take a knee controversy to continue their chaos campaign. Senator Lankford of Oklahoma said in a hearing yesterday that the Russians were taking both sides of the argument and talking out of both sides of their mouth. They've taken to social media and they are taking a knee and linking arms, standing up for the veterans. And make sure you take a knee and stand against Trump. Make sure you take a knee and stand against a racist America. All they're doing is inflaming the divisiveness. They need us to be pitted against each other. We're being played like a fiddle. And while the collusion narrative continues in the media, a foreign intelligence service is actively trying to split us apart. The Russians have been doing this for decades, but never on the scale like this, because they've never had, technology has opened up an entirely new era in espionage. And the scary part is, this is only the beginning. And we're already being duped. Look how easy it has been to turn us against one another. Imagine what they'll be able to do to us in the next 2 to 5 years if we don't wake up. Don't add fuel to the fire. Everyone I know hates the way Facebook and Twitter, you know, people are talking on Twitter and Facebook. Everybody I know. And the most noble say, that's why I don't use it anymore. Okay, well, that's one way to go. But nature abhors a vacuum. Silence in the face of evil is evil itself. You can't just go silent anymore. Your silence is aiding and abetting. You need to pump positive out in the world. No matter how hard they come at you, no matter what they say to you, no matter how many times you've been torn apart, you say good, simple, true things that are peaceful, that are kind, that are servant in their nature. And I promise you, if you do that, you will heal the nation. But you have to find and follow the great masters of healing. Because right now, chaos is the name of the game. And it only works if we're all dead asleep.
It's Thursday, September 28th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
I want to introduce you to a friend of mine, and he's actually a guy who is a New York Times bestselling author, The Miracle of Freedom, The 7 Tipping Points That Saved the World, which is a fantastic book. Ted Stewart is that author. He was a U.S. District Court judge appointed by Bill Clinton. He was, you know, a chief of staff to the Utah governor, executive director of the State Department of Natural Resources, blah, blah, blah. And just a really, really smart guy. And concerned about the direction of our country, and has put together a book, Supreme Power, the 7 pivotal Supreme Court decisions that had a major impact on America. And I want to talk to him about that. But Ted, I actually want to start here. This is something that Chuck Todd on Meet the Press said yesterday, and maybe you can help educate everybody on where he went wrong. Listen to this audio.
Roy Moore, where the phrase Christian conservative doesn't even begin to describe him, could very well be your next U.S. senator. If you don't understand just how freaked out some folks in the GOP and the White House are about what that means, then you don't know Roy Moore. First off, he doesn't appear to believe in the Constitution as it's written.
Our rights don't come from government. They don't come from a Bill of Rights. They come from Almighty God.
Now, that's just a taste of what are very fundamentalist views that have gotten him removed from office twice as Alabama's Chief Justice.
Ted, I believe that almost everyone would have to be removed from office up until maybe 20 years ago, with an exception of maybe FDR and Woodrow Wilson, if that were not true. Can you explain to the American people where rights come from and why it's important?
Well, I don't have to give my opinion on that, because we can rely on the language of those who created this government, the Constitution of the United States, as motivated by the Declaration of Independence, where it is stated with absolute clarity that rights come from God. The role of government is to protect those rights. In order for government to operate, we have to surrender a certain amount of our rights to that government for the protection of the bulk of the rights. And whenever government takes from the people more rights than we have voluntarily surrendered, that is tyranny. So, that is the foundation of our government. That was what the Constitution was intended to put into place and to protect.
So Ted, you and I know this, and you know that you cannot separate the Constitution from the Declaration of Independence, but the progressives will teach and have taught, I think even Chuck Todd, that the Declaration of Independence has nothing to, it's just a document. That's all that is. The Constitution is the only founding document that means anything, and it doesn't clearly state that as clearly as it does in the Declaration of Independence.
I cannot cite specifically to the Supreme Court decisions, but there have been, during the 230-year history of our country, at least one, if not more, Supreme Court decisions which have stated that, in fact, the Declaration of Independence is part of the founding documents that the court must consider when it is right. interpreting the Constitution itself.
So you wrote this book about the pivotal Supreme Court decisions that really have changed everything. And as I read through it, you know, you would never think that the hours of a bakery would actually take you to abortion, but that's exactly what happened. Can you explain that? Because that's, I think, one of the seven. I don't remember which one it was. But I think it's Lochner versus New York, if I look at it, that says, you know, this is about a bakery and baker's hours, and we get abortion out of that.
It was a 1905 case. The issue was whether or not a New York statute that limited the hours that bakers could require their employees to work. It was challenged, and the Supreme Court struck it down. And in doing so, they said that there is a liberty interest, the right to contract. That meant that an employee could, because of that liberty interest, contract with an employer to work as many hours as that employee wanted. It was not a big issue for very long, because subsequently the Supreme Court changed its position. But what it did is it created a power in the courts to define what liberty means under the 5th and 14th Amendments to the Constitution. And that ability to determine what the word means, basically removing it to a large extent from our elected officials, subsequently became the basis for Roe versus Wade, restricting the right of states to limit abortions. Most recently, the case of Obergefell versus Hodges. And in that latter mentioned case, the dissenters specifically said, you guys are just playing this Lochner game. You're resurrecting, again, this theory that courts by themselves get to define what liberty is. And, you know, that is fine as long as what they're trying to do, they meaning the Supreme Court, are trying to discern what the founders meant by liberty, or what those who wrote the 14th Amendment after the Civil War meant by liberty. But in the case of Obergefell specifically, they came up with their own idea of what liberty was and imposed it upon the American people. You know, in that Obergefell decision, there was a very telling dissent by Justice Scalia, and it was really the thing that motivated me in the end to write this book. And Justice Scalia said this. He said, and I'm paraphrasing, he said, I don't much care about the marriage laws of the United States. I don't care what the respective states do with marriage. But then he went on to say, but I do care about who rules over me. And then he said, this decision today tells me that the ruler of myself and 320 million Americans are five lawyers on the Supreme Court. And I think that very stark statement by Justice Scalia more or less got me to say, you know, do the American people understand the extent to which the Supreme Court has shaped America? Do they understand that the America that we live in today has been decided by many factors, but the Supreme Court has played a key role? And most importantly, are they comfortable with the role that
So Ted, not too many people know this. The Supreme Court was, it's an equal branch of the government, but it didn't even have a place to meet. It met in the basement of the Capitol for a long time. That's where the Supreme Court was. It didn't have this huge building. That was FDR that kind of elevated this. They've been fighting and trying to, since 1803, as you point out in your book, fighting for their place and saying, no, we are the arbiters of what's constitutional, what's unconstitutional. We've gotten to a place so far where what they say is God and it rules over all of us. Is there a way to reverse it?
Well, I think the only way we reverse that is to reverse those who are appointed to the judiciary at every level, but in particular the nine members of the Supreme Court. I point out one of the little stories I tell in the book is about how the only justice to ever come from the state of Utah was a man named George Sutherland. He was appointed by President Harding in 1922. His nomination was sent to the Congress the same day. He was confirmed the same day. Sutherland was not even in the country, and he was made aware of his appointment and confirmation by a letter from the president, almost as an aside. And the reason why that is important is it tells you that in 1922, Supreme Court justice appointments were not that big of a deal because the Supreme Court itself had not interposed itself in the ways that it has since in shaping America. In contrast, that with the fight over Justice Gorsuch, where I understand that literally millions of dollars were spent for and against him in certain states trying to get the senators to either vote to confirm him or not to. That I think is great evidence of how much power the Supreme Court has assumed and has had given to it, if you will, by the nature of our congressional and presidential actions today.
Judge Ted Stewart, the name of the book is Supreme Power, Seven Pivotal Supreme Court Decisions That Had a Major Impact on America. If you've never read a book by Ted, you need to. Really, really good. Very, very clear. And this book is a great place to start and say, what the hell happened? How did we get here? And what is the way back? Thanks, Ted.
Thank you, Glenn.
The Seven Pivotal Supreme Court Decisions That Had a Major Impact on America is the name of the book. It's Judge Ted Stewart. One of them is Wicker versus Filburn, which we didn't get into, but that's something that affects every one of us every single day.
Every day.
And
you'll be amazed. When you read this book, you'll be amazed at it. You're like, holy cow, it started with that? You really will.
It's amazing.
You really will.
Start.
Supreme Power is the name of the book. The average property loss from one home break-in is about $2,500. You know what's worse than losing $2,500 is, honestly, have you ever had anybody break into your house, Stu? Break into your car or anything?
My car, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Did you feel...
Oh, you don't even want to drive it around. It felt like a foreign place. It had been violated.
Yeah, it's really weird. You don't even think about it. Now, imagine somebody going through your house. You walk in and somebody's gone through your house. It's spooky. It's really spooky. SimpliSafe Home Security will make sure that every door, every window in your home is protected. You have the motion sensors. Somebody opens up a door. Somebody opens a window or breaks the glass. The alarms are going to go off and the police are going to be notified. Now, there's no holes in the wall. It's completely wireless. You can install this yourself and it's $15 a month. You have 24/7 professional monitoring ready to call the police or fire or ambulance 24/7 a day. And if you don't want the professional monitoring, you just want the alarms, you can get that too. And there's no contract. So have the professional monitoring if you're gone for a vacation and then cancel it when you get home. Whatever you want. Take control of your own life and your own safety. SimpliSafeBeck.com. Get a special 10% discount today if you order at SimpliSafeBeck.com. If you want to get it right away, because I don't know, you're afraid there's somebody's going to break into your house tonight, you can go to Best Buy and you'll have it protected by, you know, an hour later. I would order it through the website. You can save 10%. SimpliSafeBeck.com. Save 10% right now. SimpliSafeBeck.com.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
So when you get to the end of your life, how many of us will be able to say, I made a difference? And I don't mean in one other person's life, because you just never know. But I mean, you've changed a culture. I don't think there's a lot of people that can say that. Hugh Hefner died at 91, and good or bad, he changed our culture.
No kidding. Wasn't the he published the Playboy Philosophy in 1962. That's when it started. 25 installments. The causes: abortion rights. Certainly, everyone that's there. That's, you can't even oppose that in the Democratic Party. They'll cut off your funding. Decriminalization of marijuana, and of course the repeal of 19th century sex laws. All of those,
except for the sex laws one. I mean, you just never convince me that that is a healthy thing. But instead, you know, the instead, everything but the sex laws really has been repealed.
What do you mean? Which laws are you talking about? I mean, I think that would just
prostitution.
Okay. Yeah. You like know, we're sex moving workers.
On, yeah. We're
and
moving.
And that's happened
on,
in you know one
yeah,
state.
One state.
In,
but yeah. the marijuana thing is
marijuana thing's basically happened. But I mean the loosening of the standards when it comes to sexuality. Is,
yeah.
I mean,
and it's all one man.
Glenn Beck.
I would too.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Yeah, it's, you know, there's a couple of things that we have to address here. Pat has just joined us, getting ready for Pat Gray.
Hi, Pat.
Hi. Hi,
good,
Stu.
Good to see
Glenn,
you today.
You as well. You as well.
Yeah, it's okay to see you.
Okay.
It's
not necessarily good.
Not necessarily good, but not bad. I don't mean that in a bad way. It's just okay to see you.
How could you take that in
right.
a bad way?
Exactly right. You know? So Pat's getting ready to do his program, Meaningful Follows. This one, we want to talk to him about a couple of things, but... you know, we were just in the break, we were talking about the new tax plan.
Isn't it great?
Yeah, it's great. And, you know, watching MSNBC up here, and it talks about, you know, the top tax payers, they're going to get benefits out of this. Well, it's 2% of the population. Why 0.2% of the population. Why is this such a big deal? And is there any place... Do progressives and socialists need to have every place on earth?
Well, yeah. I don't know why, but they do.
Just I mean, a little bit can't they, I mean, you have mm-hmm. Canada, you have the rest of the world, and it's not working. Can we just have one place? Just one. Just one. I'll take a state, Texas. Just leave us alone.
Yeah.
Why can't we have that?
Giant man-made islands off the coast in international waters. It's the only solution.
There. I will live there.
And then that'll get screwed up in a few years, too. But then you can always put another one up.
Yeah, once you get one up, then you're like, I'm building my own platform.
Yeah, everyone will just have their own island in the middle of the water, and we'll all be happy. Surely, it'll work out perfectly.
Yeah, I'm willing to do it. I mean, it would probably be good for the... I'm willing to try. Is there no place where free men can just be free? If this were different, if there was yet another space just over the horizon and we're like, I don't know, sea monsters could eat you and you might fall off the face of the earth. But I hear there's this great place where you can just go and be yourself.
I'm willing to try.
I would. At this point, I would. I really would. I'd be like, okay, let's go.
Let's take our chances with the sea monsters.
I really would. Let's go. Mars, you know, I don't know if you saw what Elon Musk is talking about. Have you seen his Mars rocket?
I don't know if I've seen a picture of it.
You would know it if you saw it. I saw an interview with him, and I'm like, wait. That's your Mars rocket? It is 40 stories tall. It can fit a fully loaded with passengers, all the cargo, all the luggage, a 747 inside its cargo hold. Okay. It's outrageous how big this thing is. And so I'm thinking to myself, that's crazy. That's not gonna, how is it? I can't even remember how the thrust on this thing. It's crazy, the thrust to get this up. And I'm listening to it, and I'm thinking, that's never going to happen. And he said, the interviewer said, okay, so your timeline is 10 years? And he said, yeah, I mean, that's what we say. And I'm thinking, you know, it's probably 15, 20 years. And he said, but internally, we're a little more aggressive. We'd like to do it in 5. Holy cow.
Wow.
But I'm thinking, you know, he's talking about a million people in 10 years on Mars.
In 10 years?
In 10 years, no. Putting a million people on Mars.
No way that can happen. No way.
That's what I think, too. But you know what? Don't count him out. Yeah, I don't know.
Past him. Yeah. Although I will say the thrust needed to lift that thing off the Earth would wipe out every emission that he supposedly saved from the entire project.
Yeah, I don't think he cares at that point. He's all like, see you later, suckers. You know, when you see a million people up in Mars, I might consider that.
And a lot of people would like you to do it.
Yeah, I know. Mm-hmm. I know.
Including a couple in this room. If I'm
okay.
Not
all right. I think this is turning ugly on me. So let's go right over to Pat and find out what's on his mind today.
A little depressed today.
Oh my gosh,
Hugh Hefner, we lost him.
Oh boy,
we lost him.
Oh boy,
can you just break it to us like that?
Well, he's sick. Oh, no, he doesn't feel good at all. He's dead.
Oh my.
Well, okay, good. Thank you for taking me all the way through that.
Yeah,
91, and I love the Twitter love for him. All of these celebrities and fans telling him what an uncompromising force he was. Rest in peace.
He was. Oh. He was.
Your legacy and soul shall live on forever.
And some would say in a never-ending burning lake of fire, but
some would say that. It will go on. I'm not his judge, but I'm just saying he's going to burn in the fires of hell. You know, he got generations of men hooked on porn. What a legacy. You know, it leads to sexual dysfunction, marital problems. He probably contributed pretty well to the divorce rate in this country.
Sure he did.
I bet he did.
I'm sure he did.
He paid women to have sex with him and live with him. He exploited and objectified women. And by the way, where's the women's groups on that? Nobody's saying this guy wasn't a good guy.
You know why? You know why they didn't? Because one of the first things he did is said, I'm going to take on abortion. Mm-hmm. I believe in free abortions.
Of course he does. Yeah.
That way.
Of course he does.
Wiped out his whole net worth if he had to pay for them.
but also, that way he got, you know, all the women's groups that they're real. They don't care about women. They care about
their agenda.
Agenda.
Their leftist agenda.
Yeah.
There is no way that guy didn't contribute greatly to the moral breakdown of this country.
I don't
he
think.
Did.
So we were just talking about this, Pat. I don't know of somebody, you know, when we all die.
Mm-hmm.
You know, very few of us, people are going to say they made an impact.
Hugh Hefner made an impact.
Yeah, really rare that somebody dies and you say that person changed a culture. He did. He changed a culture. I can't think of anybody who has led to more bad stuff in our culture.
Seriously.
In my lifetime than Hugh Hefner.
We went from a society that couldn't show a married couple in bed together to naked women in magazines all over the place, to billboards that can show everything, to where we are now. And we went there pretty quickly after Playboy debuted.
And really, outside of the Elle Macpherson issue, it's hard to point to real positives. I mean, I think we all would admit...
No, so he did some things right.
He got some things right.
Nobody's saying he featured ugly women. I don't think anybody's saying. In fact, I would have liked to have heard that conversation between he and St. Peter on the other side.
Oh, that would have been interesting.
Okay, so it says here that you lived your life in your jammies and took pictures of naked women your whole life. Hugh, you've already experienced heaven on earth. We got something else in mind for you now.
Do you think he ever got to a point to where he was like, man, I wear pajamas every day. I want to spend the day in a suit.
You'd have to, I guess. I mean, you'd want tight-fitting clothes.
Well, yeah, I'm tired of just always having to wear the pajamas.
Way too comfortable all the time.
I just want to wear a tie.
Yeah, the coverage was interesting, too, because they had... First of all, he was buried next to Marilyn Monroe, which is kind of an interesting twist to this.
Yeah, it is.
But the, you know, all the news... he's a big celebrity. People know who he is.
Mm-hmm.
So they're doing this big, you know, hey, let's, this is what, of course, every news broadcast does now. It's like, oh, hello, someone you know has died over the night. We have really nothing to say about it. So let's feature tweets from other people you might know. Like, for it's example, crazy. And they'll just cycle through like mediocre celebrities saying like,
Hugh Hefner's soul is what you will live on forever. Right.
So they did this, and they're cycling through the typical celebrities that we're mentioning and people who are his contemporaries that are somehow still alive. And then they get to Jesse Jackson.
Now, listen to this. This is great. Listen to this.
Jesse Jackson goes, Hugh Hefner, a man, I don't have the exact quote, so I'm paraphrasing. Hugh Hefner, a man who stood up and fought tough battles for civil rights. He will always be remembered. Aren't you a reverend? A reverend is remembering Hugh Hefner like that. Now,
the answer to that is no, he's not a reverend.
No, he's, yeah, and that's the thing. He's just,
no, he's not.
You know anybody in his congregation?
No,
I don't
know.
I don't
know. It doesn't happen.
Pat Gray Unleashed coming up on the Blaze Radio and Television Networks. Listen every day and subscribe on iTunes to the podcast.
It's really great. And by the way, Doc Thompson starts the day at, 5 a.m. Central Time every day. And he's great. So you can watch it and listen to it. Blaze Radio. Start your day with us and my program and then Pat after that. 143 million Americans, that is the number that is affected by the Equifax breach. Have you checked your credit card status? Have you checked your credit status at all? Were you a part of this Equifax hacking? These hackers now have the information to identity thieves want and need to impersonate you. They have your name, they have your social security number, they have your birth date, they have your addresses. Now, with that, they can destroy your life. They can open credit cards. They can take out loans. They can apply for mortgages in your name. So what do you do? I mean, it's Equifax. For the love of Pete, it's Equifax. Well, you put LifeLock on, and you make sure that you... I remember, wasn't it LifeLock where the CEO came out originally and put his social security number on buses? Remember that?
Yeah, I think so.
And he was like, that's my social security number, and nobody's going to... They can't do that now. I mean, you just can't do that anymore. Nobody can guarantee that nobody's going to get into it. Nobody can monitor everything that's happening. The world has changed.
Yeah, but you have to just take steps to minimize the possibility of it and then make sure it's put together afterwards.
Correct.
If, God forbid, if something happens, and LifeLock does that.
I remember when he was doing that, I remember thinking, nobody's trying to steal my identity. Oh, my gosh. Now they are. And it is a global epidemic. If you don't think Russians aren't sitting there in their Hugh Hefner underpants and hacking in, that's where a lot of this is coming from. If there is a problem, a U.S.-based identity restoration specialist is going to work to fix it. Nobody can monitor all transactions at all businesses and prevent all identity theft. But LifeLock, man, they are on it. Call 800-LIFELOCK, 1-800-LIFELOCK. Use the promo code BECK. That's BECK for a 10% discount off your LifeLock membership. LifeLock.com, promo code BECK, 1-800-LIFELOCK.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
Welcome back to the program. There's a couple things that I want to make sure that you know about. Puerto Rico, the hurricane victims are having a hard time getting help, and that's for a few reasons. The ports are all down, so getting ships there. It is why we didn't send the USS Comfort right away. Because the ports could not take this. Is the Puerto Rican governor said, please don't send it. Ports can't take it. And so we haven't sent it. I think it's on its way, but it's not there yet. They're still trying to work on all of the ports, which is stopping supplies from coming in. Also, the USS Comfort was not there because the governor of Puerto Rico said, could you help us please fix the hospitals first?
So that's what we're trying to do, is get the hospitals up and running. I know Team Rubicon and Mercury One are trying. They already have one team on the ground there, but we're trying to get more on the ground. The problem is we think we can get supplies there. We think we can pull that off. But the real problem is, how do you get them from the airport? The supplies are coming off of these, you know, containers that are on these giant cargo planes. They're coming off, but they're just sitting there now at the airport because there's no fuel for any trucks. They can't find the truck drivers because there's no cell service. They can't organize anything yet. This is going to take a kind of a Marshall Plan airlift to get this thing done.
And we've had so many natural disasters lately, taking the focus off of a few of the really important things going on. The opioid crisis is something we've talked about a little bit, and it's a huge crisis in the country. Vice did an article about the secret lives of functioning heroin users, and they had some interesting perspective.
Functioning heroin.
Apparently, wow. They're still trying to work, but one of the things is... Wow. That the economic situation has really played into this and had people, you know, it's worse and worse because of the economic situation. This is what Vice writes. Ed Murray has helped create Seattle's economic troubles. He resigned as the city's mayor a couple weeks ago because he sexually abused five young men and boys.
Jeez.
In 2014, Seattle's progressive city council voted to increase the city's minimum wage to $15 an hour over a period of years. The left rejoiced. Murray had run on a platform calling for the raise. 3 years later, things haven't worked out the way the central planners wanted. When Seattle officials voted 3 years ago to incrementally boost the city's minimum wage up to $15 an hour, they'd hoped to improve the lives of low-income workers, reported the Washington Post. Yet, according to a major new study that could force economists to reassess past research on the issue, the hike has had the opposite effect.
Of course.
Of course. Some employers have not been able to afford the increased minimums. They've cut their payrolls, putting off new hiring, reducing hours, or letting their workers go, the study found. Did the Seattle council members pause? No. The heroes of the people are unstoppable. Seattle City Council voted unanimously to create a new income tax on high earners.
It's going to drive those people out.
Amazing. The measure requires residents making more than $250,000 annually, or couples making over $500,000 to pay an extra 2.25% tax on incomes above these levels. It was initially voted down, but they're going to try to push it through.
I will tell you, the only things that are saving Seattle, Microsoft, Amazon, and Costco. Those three businesses.
Microsoft, you know, Amazon, and Costco. No, Starbucks? Doesn't Starbucks get credit for something?
Yeah, I guess Starbucks. Maybe. In. I don't know how many people they employ in Seattle, but I mean, in an actual headquarters sort of way.
Right, right, sure.
But they're changing, you know, the Amazon and Apple, and it, to some degree, Costco, changing, really, truly changing everything. And how long can you afford? Because this is only going to get worse. This is what progressives do. They start on one thing, and then that doesn't work. So then they have to change another thing, and then that doesn't work. And then they have to change another thing. And they impoverish everyone all along the way. It's where California is. And it just becomes unlivable. And, you know, people become wards of the state. They can't get out. They can't afford to get out. And you're trapped there. And before that happens, usually companies leave. Now, because... You know, Microsoft and I would imagine Amazon are so progressive that, you know, they're going to do everything they can. But at some point, you leave because you can't afford business there. And then what happens?
Glenn Beck.